1-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager! That just happened! Thank you very much!
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
And it's time once again for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Gary Hill here. Thanks for coming along again. Great to have you. This is the off-day version. Yesterday was the off-day. Of course, today, back to baseball. Kind of a bummer of an off-day. I was in rhythm already. It only took 3 days, and I'm ready to go every day. But off-day yesterday, so no game to recap, but a lot coming up with a three-game weekend against the Oakland A's. So we'll go in-depth on those three games coming up. We'll take a look at what the A's have done so far. And look at the pitching matchups coming up this weekend. It should be a very interesting weekend. The Mariners in Oakland for three, and then they head to the Dodgers for three before an off day next Thursday, and then a nice long homestand. The Texas Rangers next weekend for three, the Astros after that for three, and then the Minnesota Twins the following weekend, all at home for three more. So a big opportunity in that homestand for the Mariners. But this road trip will not be an easy road trip. I think the A's are a pretty good team, and the Dodgers obviously the favorites in the NL West. So they're going to face some really good pitching the next six games, so we'll see how they come out of it. So coming up on this podcast, we're going to preview the Texas Rangers. We're still in our division previews, and although the Rangers don't come up next weekend, we'll go in-depth with a really good look at the Texas Rangers from Jeff Wilson. He covers them on a daily basis, so he's coming up in just a few minutes. The history portion of the podcast, I think you're really going to enjoy. I've never played this. From the 1993 All-Star Game, Jerry Coleman, longtime San Diego Padres play-by-play announcer, really a broadcasting legend, is on the call for CBS Radio of the All-Star Game. It's Randy Johnson on the hill, and it's a great half inning. And that comes up in the podcast, which I think you'll really enjoy. So that's coming up before we head into the weekend. And, of course, we'll be back on Monday, daily podcast, weekday podcast. And Monday, we get to hear for the first time Bullpen Banter with Charlie Frobisch. Yes, it is back. You will hear it here on the podcast every single Monday. So you have that to look forward to next podcast. First things first, let's take a look at the matchups this weekend. A's and Mariners. Now, the A's have played one more game than the M's. They had a four-game series against the Texas Rangers starting on Monday, and they played yesterday while the Mariners were off. It was a weird series between the A's and the Rangers. First, we'll look at the pitching matchups. Taijuan Walker going to take his first turn for the M's this year, so he'll get the call. And I think everybody's anxious to see Walker take the mound for the first time this year. He's going to go against the lefty, Drew Pomerantz. Pomerantz last year pitched for Oakland 20 games last year, 10 of them in the rotation, 10 out of the bullpen, 69 innings pitched overall. Gave up 51 hits. He fanned 64 in those 69 innings. Nice whip of 1.12, his ERA 2.35 last season. Spent the previous couple of years with the Colorado Rockies. What's interesting is when you break down his, when you look at him between starter and bullpen last year, as a reliever, a 1.62 ERA, a starter, 2.58, but a lot of the numbers pretty similar. As a reliever, opponents just batted 200 against him, a starter, 205 against him. As strikeouts as a starter, 50 Ks in 52 innings. As a reliever, 14 strikeouts in 16 and two-thirds innings. He faced the Mariners a couple of times last year, and he had a lot of success. Five games total against the Mariners. He ended up going 2-0 with a 0.82 ERA. One of those was a start, so only 11 innings total. But five hits, just one earned run, a solo home run, no walks, nine strikeouts. Mariners batted 128 against Pomerantz last year, and he's a big key to the A's rotation, a very young rotation, but a very talented rotation, and that left-handed arm is a big part of that. So a couple of young guns going at it with Walker and Pomerantz. That's an exciting matchup. I'm looking forward to the game tonight quite a bit. And we're going to see some great pitching matchups in this one all the way around. Now, game two of the series is going to be awfully difficult for the Mariners, as they're going to go against Sonny Gray in game two. Gray was unbelievable the first time out against the Texas Rangers, taking a no-hitter deep into the ballgame and just absolutely dominating Texas. We'll get to that game more in a second. Jay Happ is going to take his first start with the Mariners on Saturday. It's a 1:05 first pitch on Saturday, so day baseball on Saturday. And then Sunday, the King, Felix Hernandez, will take the hill. He has absolutely owned the Oakland A's, so he'll get his turn in Oakland. And he's facing a pitcher, I don't know, many of you probably haven't heard of, but he's good. Jesse Hahn, who's a young pitcher. I think he's going to be outstanding this year for Oakland. Very young guy, came up with the Padres last year and made an impact right away. 12 starts last season, 73 and a third innings. He had 70 strikeouts in that time. He was 7-4 with a 3.07 ERA. Seeing his first major league action for the San Diego Padres. And he was another addition, part of the big remake for Billy Beane and the Oakland A's over the winter. He's part of the Derek Norris deal as Norris went to San Diego. But Hahn has a chance to be a good one. So a lot of good pitching I think we're going to see over the weekend. We get to see Felix. Gray is going to pitch. Hahn, who I think is a young up-and-comer. Pomerantz and Walker, a couple of young guns. And, of course, Happ gets his first turn in a Mariners uniform as well. So lines up to be a pretty good series. Mariners coming off of losing 2 of 3 to the Angels to start the year. The Oakland A's, they're 2-2. They split with the Texas Rangers in a wild series. Game one, it was all Oakland, 8-0. Again, I mentioned Sonny Gray was absolutely dominant in game one. He took a no-hit bid into the eighth inning, as he absolutely dominated what's a pretty good offense when you look at the Texas Rangers went healthy, and we'll hear more about the Texas Rangers in a moment. But Gray went 8 innings, gave up 1 hit, no runs, 1 walk, and 3 strikeouts, throwing 98 pitches in the ballgame. And the offense for Oakland really exploded in the contest. Gallardo got the opening start for the Rangers, and he gave up 2 in the 1st, 2 in the 4th, and then Oakland played some add-on late in the ballgame. Got a home run from Ben Zobrist in his very first at-bat in an Oakland A's uniform. He goes deep. He had an extra base hit in the ballgame as well. Just a brand-new offense, especially the middle of the order. You have Zobrist now in the middle. You have Billy Butler coming over from Kansas City. Ike Davis, who's been in a couple places, the Mets and the Pirates. Brett Laurie coming over from the Blue Jays, just completely different middle of the order for the Oakland A's. They had a big night in game one. Game two of the series against the Rangers was a completely different story. That was actually the only pitcher's duel of the entire series. A 3-1 Texas Rangers win. That was a start for Hahn, making his first start for the Oakland A's. And he pitched pretty well in the ballgame. He ended up getting saddled with the loss, but he goes 6 innings total, 7 hits, 3 earned runs, no walks, 3 strikeouts against Texas. So they had a split in the first two games, and then it was just landslides the final two games of the series. Oakland walloping Texas 10-0 in game three of the series. Kazmir getting the start there. Mariners will miss him. And then yesterday, Texas returning the favor and crushing the Oakland A's 10-1. Graveman getting his first start. He's another one of the young pitchers for the Oakland A's. And it was bombs away as Chu hit a home run for the Texas Rangers. Beltre, a couple of hits as well. Fielder, a couple of hits. Rua had 3 hits in left field for Texas as they really broke out the lumber. And he got shelled, 3 1/3 innings and 7 earned runs. So the A's split with Texas in 4 games. The Mariners dropped 2 of 3 to the Angels, and now they connect for 3 games coming up this weekend. Should be fun. Make sure to tune in tonight, 6 o'clock for the pregame show, 7:05, first pitch from Oakland on the Mariners Radio Network. Should be a good series, and we'll talk about it all on Monday. Right now, though, we're going to talk a little bit more about the Texas Rangers. What do we expect from Texas? Healthy? How much better are they when they're healthy? Of course, the loss of Darvish, are they better in the rotation? Well, there's no one better to answer all of those questions than Jeff Wilson. Well, now we get a chance to take an in-depth look at the Texas Rangers, and to help us do that, we've contacted Jeff Wilson from the Dallas Star-Telegram. You can find him on Twitter at @JeffWilson_FWST. Jeff, thanks a lot for the time. This is a very interesting look at, I mean, you can make, from the outside looking in, there's arguments to be made for a team that can make the playoffs or a team that can finish in last place again or everything in between. So as somebody watches the Texas Rangers on a daily basis, what's your read on this team heading into the regular season?
Well, it's the same as what you just said. They really could do a lot of things. I'm not sure they can contend. They have to have too much go right. Maybe they're due after a year in which everything went wrong. But they've already lost Yu Darvish, which is a very significant blow. So the pitching rotation's already taking a little bit of a shot there. Offensively, you know, Prince Fielder is healthy. Shin-Soo Chu is healthy. So they need to produce like they're healthy. And, you know, last year you kind of write off what Fielder did for sure because he had the neck damage that needed surgery. Chu played injured, so you look at his numbers and you think, boy, he was terrible. And he was, but he was also playing with a sprained ankle and with bone chips in his elbow. But those are the two guys that the Rangers need to produce. That's why they acquired him. Fielder, they're paying him a ton of money. They're paying Chu a ton of money, and they have to be that kind of player if the Rangers are going to have any chance.
You mentioned the Darvish injury right off the bat. You had a really interesting piece, I thought, about the starting rotation. Even without Darvish, are they better this year than last year in the rotation?
Well, there's no question about it. If you look at the rotation last year, their opening day starter was Tanner Shepherd, who the year before had been their eighth inning setup reliever. They had Robbie Ross in the rotation, and he flamed out, and they got rid of him because they just don't like him. And Joe Saunders, who Seattle fans are very familiar with, and he stunk it up last year. So this is a rotation this year that has Giovanni Gallardo, who is making his sixth opening day start of his career, Derek Collins, who's healthy, Colby Lewis, who's the club's all-time leader in postseason wins, Nick Martinez, who was in Double-A 2 years ago, was a shocking member of the rotation to open last season. He's got another year under his belt. And then Ross Detweiler, who's had some starting experience in the National League. So just those five alone are superior to the five that opened the season in the rotation last year.
And we know Feliz is back in the back end of the bullpen for Texas, although it seems like they're putting a guy out of the pen on the DL every day here to end the end spring training. What is the back end of the bullpen going to look like beyond Feliz?
To open the season, it's going to be probably a bunch of guys that you haven't heard of. Sean Thompson, you've heard of, but he's never really pitched late in games. But he's going to probably be the guy that sets up Feliz. Keone Kella, who has some ties to the Seattle area, he's going to be in the bullpen, even though he's never pitched above Double-A, but boy, he's got a power arm with power stuff. He's really looked good in the spring. And then really it's until Tanner Shepherd is healthy, until QT Puchikawa is healthy, it's going to be a bunch of guys you never heard of. John Edwards, who had a handful of innings last season. Sam Freeman, who was a National League player with the Cardinals last year. It's just going to be mix and match and survive until everybody is back and healthy.
Visiting with Jeff Wilson from the Dallas Star-Telegram. You can find him on Twitter at @JeffWilson_FWST. I'm curious about Elvis Andrus, who they inked to a long-term deal a couple of years ago. What is your view of where he is at heading into this season?
Yeah, that's another one of the questions the Rangers have. This guy's 26, and that sounds young, but he's been in the this is the seventh year in the big league. This is a guy who basically learned on the job starting in 2009. He can be a very exciting player. He's fast. He has great instincts on the bases. Defensively, he makes some amazing plays, and really, I think a lot of people are kind of surprised that he isn't consistent enough to be in contention for a Gold Glove. But after last season, when he was heavier, not necessarily fat, but he tried to carry some muscle, it slowed him down. He was a step slow. The muscle he added didn't translate at the plate. So this year, he shed some weight. He's trying to be the player he was in 2010, 2011, when he was all over the bases for the Rangers, and those are their best teams. So he's the guy he handles the bat. He knows what his job is, so that's good. He understands this, but the Rangers need him to drive the ball a little bit more. They need him to be a tick wiser on the bases. He got thrown out a bunch of times last year. And then defensively, he can be he can be a plus defender. It needs to come all together. This is a guy who's getting paid a ton of money, $15 million a year this year, and he's not a $15 million a year player based on last year. And really, if you can say that about really his whole career. But they still believe he can grow. Like I said, he's only 26.
Adrian Beltre, of course, has been tremendously consistent. He has been outstanding offensively, defensively. He's been just massive for the Texas Rangers the last few years. How vital is it for him to be the same guy this year if the Rangers want to finish above 500 and even tickle contention?
Yeah, what he did last year, he only hit 19 homers. I don't think he even drove in 80 runs. But he hit 321. He had no protection. He had no line of protection. It was really amazing what he was doing. This year, he should be surrounded by Chu and Fielder, or Fielder and Chu, depending on how the lineup shakes out most nights. He's going to have protection. That's going to make him more effective. This is a guy who's amazing, really. This is his 17th or 18th year in the major leagues. I mean, he's a guy who, when you look at the numbers statistically, he's one of the best third basemen of all time. And that's just offensively. Defensively, he's not Brooks Robinson, but he's pretty darn good. He's got four Gold Gloves. He's a little older now. I mean, he's going to be slowing down some, but the Ranger line can run enough to go ahead and pick up the option for 2016, and this is a guy who is so respected in the clubhouse and around the league. He has such a great time playing the game. To not have him, to lose him to a leg injury and all that would be a big blow. And when you talk about the team's success, there's Chu and Fielder, but they're counting on Beltre to do what he's been doing since they signed him.
Beyond kind of the obvious headlining names for the Rangers, is there a name we should get familiar with, someone to know that maybe popped this year for Texas?
I really like the second baseman, Rube Neto Dorr. He was a rookie last year, came up in May. He loves to hit. It's like he's kind of a natural hitter. He'll be a free swinger at times. He'll show some patience. He's a little guy, but he can hit you 15 home runs. Defensively, he got better as the year went along last year, so he's got a chance to be an average defender and get better as his career goes along. But he's 21, maybe 22, young guy from Venezuela. He seems to get along really well with all the guys, if you ask any of his teammates about him, they love him. They love his offensive potential and just the attitude that it brings. He's a guy that he's hard-nosed. I mean, he doesn't back down from anybody, even as a such a young guy in a sport where time really is a highly respected thing. He just goes out there and plays, and he's going to be good to watch for this year. They think he'll avoid the summer, and then he's going to be around for a while.
And finally, as you project what this season looks like, what does the division, the ALS, look like in your mind, and where does Texas fit into the mix?
Well, I think at best, looking at them right now, looking at all the questions that have to be answered, without those answers right now, I think the best they can do is third. Oakland's such a wild card. They remade their roster, but the roster kind of looks like it did last year. Different pieces in the same spot. Like Ike Davis or Brandon Moss, for instance. And their pitching's going to get better, but it's two guys coming off of Tommy John, so maybe they won't be better. Who knows? Houston, the way the Houston club's made up offensively with all those strikeouts, they're going to be easy to pitch to. If you make a mistake, they're going to hit home runs. But if you follow your scouting report and you execute your pitches, you're going to shut them down because they strike out so darn much. So, I think the Rangers are better than the Astros. I don't know that they're better than Oakland. I definitely don't think they're better than Seattle or the Angels. But, funny things happened in this game. They were one of the favorites last year to win the division, and then all those injuries happened, and they finished 67 and 95. So it's tough to predict, but right now I can't see them contending, not even for the second wild card spot.
Well, Jeff, I think we can all agree. I think we're all excited to get this thing going for real. I think everyone's done with spring training, and we certainly appreciate the time and giving us a good look at the Rangers.
All right, I appreciate it. Thanks.
So a decent start for the Texas Rangers, though, taking 2 of 4 from the A's to start the season. So we'll see what kind of noise they can make in the division. Now, speaking of noise being made, we're going to turn to the 1993 All-Star Game. Jerry Coleman on the call alongside Johnny Bench. Pretty good tandem as Randy Johnson takes the mound, pitching in the 1993 All-Star Game.
You're listening to the 64th Major League Baseball All-Star Game from CBS Radio Sports. And CBS Radio Sports coverage of the game of the week continues Saturday. Some of you will hear the game between the Kansas City Royals and the Blue Jays from Sky Dome in Toronto. Others will hear the game between the Montreal Expos and the Dodgers from Los Angeles. Please check your local listings for the game and time in your area. Right here we have a 2-1 lead in favor of the National League. The National League is coming to bat in the third inning. And Jerry Coleman, the MVP, 2 of the last 3 years, Barry Bonds, will lead off.
Yeah, and we got a new pitcher out there that will give you a stomach ache if you're not careful. His name is Randy Johnson, who strikes out more men than innings pitched. He's 6'10". And if you're a left-hand batter, John Bench, I can't think you'd be too happy to face this
You're
guy.
Talking about the stomach ache that keeps you out of that lineup just for that particular day. Seems to be a comfortable time to say, I really don't feel that good when you see 6'10". Biggest pitcher in Major League Baseball. No hitter to his credit, and he can bring it, and he's got a 10-5 record.
All right, here's Bonds with doubling his first at-bat. Hit the first pitch down the left field line. That's going to be trouble. It may be fair, and it is foul by an eyelash. Wish that umpire down the left field line named
he
Dale
just called
Scott.
A touchdown. It's a touchdown, Jerry.
I'm waiting for him to go one way or the other, and I said 6 points.
He put both arms straight up and hasn't moved yet. It's a touchdown, one of the best touchdown runs that Barry's had this year.
Oh, boy.
Johnny, you think left-handed batters hate to see the breaking ball coming from Randy Johnson. Right-handed batters don't like it either. Craig Graybeck got a broken right foot last year trying to get out of the way of a sweeping slider, kind of a hard slurve ball from Johnson.
Pitch on the way, curve inside, almost hit him, and the count goes 1-1. I think the best thing you can hope with Randy Johnson is that he gets it over the plate.
Well, the thing about it is Olerud has to play a step deeper so that he doesn't hit him on the side of the head when he brings that sidearm delivery.
Here's the pitch on the way to Bonds. Breaking ball a little bit high. And again, he's falling behind because of missing the plate. 2 balls and a strike.
Well, he was given Lupinella 144 and two-thirds innings. He has struck out 171, but he has walked 58.
A hard shot off the bat of Bonds to the shortstop Rifkin. He's up with it over at first base, and we get one away. And I'll say one thing. Bonds hung in there and hit the ball sharply, but right at the shortstop. One away.
Yeah, nothing really bothers Barry Bonds. The thing about Randy Johnson, we got to give him a lot of credit because he came over from Montreal and sort of started to settle in, but he took time to talk to Nolan Ryan. He wanted to sit down and say, how do I do it? How do I approach it? How do I become a better professional? And he's done that by listening to Nolan and applying it.
All right, here's Johnson, and a swing by Gary Sheffield, who hit the two-run homer in the first inning to give the National League the 2-1 lead. Is up there, swings and misses, strike one.
Before this year, many have questioned whether Johnson was tough enough late in the ballgame. Well, those questions have been answered.
There's a curveball and missed everybody.
Well, I think, you know, you always talk about left-handers. Now, I think he's in the mold of a left-handed reliever, which puts him just a little bit just left of center over there. The hat tilts just a little bit sideways. He's a little scary for everybody, and he doesn't like you taking swings like Gary Sheffield just took.
1-1 pitch popped up to the infield. Going for it is Ripken. He's waiting for it. He's under it, and that ball's up there a mile and a half, and he finally got it as it came down for the second out. Let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves on the CBS Radio Network.
Hi, it's DeGrasse, Dave Grosby here. Remember, call me after the game. Call me after the game. Call me after the game. Am I getting through to you people? Call me after the game on Cairo Sportsline, right here on KIRO AM Seattle.
Well, Randy Johnson's going to love what's happened to him. He had Bonds left-hand batter. He's got Crook. He's got Grace. He's got Justin. He's got Dalton. Half the team is swinging from the left side against this guy. There's a fastball over the head of everybody by the umpire to the backstop. Now, is he kidding or what? Maybe he's nervous.
John Crux hopes he's kidding. I mean, right now, John just took his helmet off and wiped the breeze, and it just looked like, I think I'll just throw it over somebody's head. You guys aren't supposed to swing this hard at me. And I tell you, when Sheffield took the first swing against him, he glared in. And then Sheffield popped it up a mile high. Crook wanted to play with his uniform, saying, my heart.
He was wanting to walk across the plate and go right to the third base dugout, but they told him to stay out there.
Well, Johnson's from the National League originally, remember?
Here's the pitch. Right down the middle. The first pitch, let me tell you, was 3 feet over Crook's head and directly over his head.
Well, there's two things. If he's doing it intentionally, then he's embarrassing John Crook.
Curveball, and Crook is gone on the swing. I mean, he was leaving home plate when the ball left his hand, and you can see the American League players laughing because it is kind of comical the way this guy is handling Crook now.
Well, it's just lost being comical for John Crook.
Here's the 1-2 pitch coming up. Curveball struck him out. So that didn't take long. One wild pitch and a couple of curveballs. Crook leaves, and the score after 2.5. National 2, American 1. You're listening to the 64 All-Star Game from CBS Radio Sports.
See you later!